Welcome to Whiskey Cask, Cask Strength Conversation, featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie. This is episode number 322 for June 26th, 2011. Coming up in a few minutes.
Us Baptist just makes it for municipal purposes only. I keep a cough all the time.
That's the one and only Jimmy Russell speaking at Wild Turkey's distillery dedication this past Tuesday in Kentucky. More with Jimmy and his son Eddie, Wild Turkey's associate distiller, later on. You'll also hear Jimmy's entire speech at the dedication ceremony, too. I'll also have the calendar of events, the emails of the week, and the What I'm Tasting This Week department. But first off, let's look at the news. It's brought to you by Glenmorangie. The Wild Turkey expansion is the week's biggest story. It's being billed as an expansion, but what it really is an all-new distillery. Grupo Campari's $50 million investment more than doubles Wild Turkey's annual production capacity to 11 million gallons. That makes it one of the largest distilleries in the U.S., but Campari CEO Bob Kunze-Consowitz told me the decision was a no-brainer.
We've been great fans of bourbon. We believe bourbon is coming back. It's definitely skipped a generation and it's growing. It's gaining an appeal along the coast, younger, more urban consumers. It's getting more international. And when the Wild Turkey brand came up for sale, you know, we jumped on it. This is truly a crown jewel. You know, we have a lot of confidence in its future. You know, it's a family of brands. It's, you know, the mother brand. It's American Honey. It's the RTD. It's Russell's Reserve. So clearly it's a vote of confidence in the future of the brand.
And you're expecting this brand to become an even more international success than it already has been, right?
We do so. We think the brand has been neglected in the past, and we see a lot of potential. But clearly, brand building takes time, so nothing happens overnight.
What will you be doing over the next few years to build this brand?
Well, you know, we've reworked the packaging. We've reworked the lineup. We have a new campaign out there, and we're investing heavily both here and in second market, Australia. And we'll start internationalizing it. We'll focus on the UK, Germany, Russia.
I have to ask a bit of a sensitive question because I know there's some controversy already about the Give Them the Bird campaign, since another distillery in Kentucky is claiming it has used that term in the past. How do you see that being resolved?
Well, in my eyes, a turkey is clearly a bird. So, you know, it fits absolutely within the brand's heritage.
Even though there's likely to be at least some legal action taken over this, if not already?
We'll take things as they come.
While I've got you here, you made the acquisition a couple of years before Wild Turkey of Glen Grant over in Scotland.
Yeah.
That's also been a big success for you.
Yes, it is. I mean, Glen Grant also, when we took it over, it had been neglected for a long time. Its role was actually only to supply, you know, scotch for one of the major blends, and we've given it its dignity back. It's a real single malt now.
Where do you see the growth going for that one?
It's growing internationally, big time, Europe, Asia. So we're very happy. We started in the U.S. last year, so we're excited.
Can you see yourself acquiring another distillery down the road at some point?
Why not? It would have to be complementary to what we have.
I have to ask, what's your history with whiskey? Because I know you have a history in the liquor business and in the drinks business, but what's your own history with whiskey?
My history with whiskey actually started with single malts. And then over time, I got more interested, more curious, and then started falling in love with bourbon.
I asked this question a couple of years ago, the last time I had a CEO on the show, to Tom Flacco at Beam. What are the privileges of being the CEO of a major drinks company? What do you have stashed away that nobody else gets access to?
Well, sometimes I get a hold of some special barrels and dedicate them to my children, and, you know, from their birth years, etc. And then they'll be theirs when the right time comes up.
I know Tom told me he had a special barrel of Laphroaig stashed away. Do you have a barrel of Wild Turkey stashed away?
Not yet, but definitely now.
You're going to pick one before you leave town, possibly?
Exactly. I've got a few barrels of Glen Grant stashed away. It's Wild Turkey's turn.
And Dennis Malcolm has got a good eye on those for you, right?
Oh, yeah, no question. He picked good ones.
The initial decision to expand the distillery came 5 years ago when Pernod Ricard owned Wild Turkey. Campari bought Wild Turkey 2 years ago from Pernod Ricard for $575 million. This is the biggest single investment in Kentucky bourbon production in years. Distillers have spent $150 million on expansion projects recently, according to the Kentucky Distillers Association, and Governor Steve Beshear told me the impact extends throughout the Commonwealth.
Well, obviously, the bourbon industry is one of the signature industries here in Kentucky, and it's a growing industry. We've got about 10,000 Kentuckians who are directly or indirectly employed in the bourbon industry. And so having a company like Campari to step up and to make a $50 million investment in a new facility is very meaningful. Number one, we know that they mean to stay here, because you don't make a $50 million investment without the idea that you're going to be here for a long time, and that excites us. At the same time, we know what that means for the future, because they're going to continue to grow, they're going to continue to employ more Kentuckians, and the tax benefits that we have from the bourbon industry are substantial, but even more substantial are those jobs I mentioned and the tourist trade that the bourbon industry creates. You know, the bourbon trail that was created a few years ago is drawing millions of people from all around the globe to Kentucky to go along that trail to sample the different bourbon whiskeys. And then they, of course, spend their money not only at the distilleries, they spend their money in many places around the Commonwealth. And that makes tourism an even bigger industry for the Commonwealth.
I'd like you to put into perspective, if you can, sort of the dichotomy within the Commonwealth between the dry counties and the non-dry counties, because those counties that those dry counties, they may not drink the stuff, but they sure do benefit from it tax-wise, right?
Well, obviously, times are changing in Kentucky as they are in other parts of this country and around the globe, and people are looking differently about alcohol and the consumption of alcohol than they have before. We have a lot more areas now that are wet or moist and serve alcohol, and I can see that change continuing to occur. It is a great industry for us. Obviously, it is growing around the world, not just in the United States, and so I'm going to do everything I can to encourage it.
And this is your state's biggest export, right?
One of our state's biggest exports, and I have traveled fairly extensively as governor around the world to create jobs, to bring more jobs to Kentucky. And I can tell you, Kentucky bourbon is known throughout this world, and it's known to come right from Kentucky.
One final question. Tell me about your first experience with Kentucky bourbon back in the day.
Well, I'd have to say it was in college at the University of Kentucky when I first tasted Kentucky's great product called Kentucky bourbon, and I have enjoyed it ever since.
No favorites, though, right?
Not when you're governor. You can't have favorites, except bourbon. That's a favorite right there.
Again, more on the new Wild Turkey Distillery with Jimmy and Eddie Russell later on in our Whiskey Cast In-Depth segment. In other news, they're still recovering from the massive earthquake last February in Christchurch, New Zealand, but there is a bit of good news to report this week. Got word that Whiskey Galore, the whiskey shop in downtown Christchurch owned by Michael Fraser Milne, will be back in business soon. The original store was damaged beyond repair in the earthquake, which came just days before Whiskey Galore was to host its biennial Dramfest event in Christchurch. A new store is being built out now on Victoria Street, and it'll open in July. I'll have more details as they're available. There's about to be a bidding war for new whiskey-related internet domains. ICANN, which is the agency that oversees internet domains, has cleared the way for investors to start buying specific words as domains next year. Let's explain. Right now, .com is the most popular domain range, but the ICANN decision means someone in the industry will be able to claim .whiskey or .whiskey with the E next year. One could also bid on .bourbon or .Irish whiskey, for instance. The catch? You have to have a business in the field for the range you want to claim, and the bidding starts at $185,000. This could get interesting. Now let's talk about some new whiskeys hitting the market. Glengoyne has released a new 14-year-old expression that will be exclusively available at Marks & Spencer's stores in the UK. It's been matured in Oloroso sherry casks. Just 3,000 bottles are available. We heard hints about this in April at Whiskey Live New York, but Tomatin has now released a new 30-year-old single malt that will replace the current 25-year-old edition in the Tomatin lineup. The Decades Edition distillery manager Douglas Campbell told us about in April is also out now. It's a vatting of casks from his 50 years in the business, with the casks coming from 1967, 1976, 1984, 1990, and 2005. Both editions are bottled at 46% ABV and will be available worldwide starting in July. A couple of years ago, the Dalmore replaced its cigar malt with the Gran Reserva because some consumers thought they needed to have cigars with it. Of course, that was never the case. It was just a single malt designed to hold up well with a cigar. And now there's a new version coming out. The Dalmore Cigar Malt Reserve is matured in Oloroso Matusalem sherry butts, with a few American white oak casks included for balance. The ratio is 70 to 30, which is higher than the original cigar malt. It's being bottled at 44% ABV and will be rolling out over the next few months. Finally, a sad note to report. Drambuie chairman Phil Parnell has died after a brief illness. He was 64 years old and joined Drambuie in 2004. He had previously worked at UDV and Guinness. And that's the news. It's brought to you by Glenmorangie, unnecessarily well-made. I don't mention the resources page on the WhiskeyCast website very often, but if you haven't checked it in a while, it's worth taking a look at. You'll find links for most of the major distilleries worldwide, along with an extensive list of whiskey bloggers and other media outlets, great whiskey bars and retailers, and travel links. If there's a link you'd like to add to the list, just email me. And speaking of that, let's check out the emails of the week now, brought to you this time around by Johnny Walker. Last month, I read an email from Ken Goldenberg in California, wondering about the similarities between Rebel Yell Bourbon and W.L. Weller's 7-Year-Old Special Reserve, and mentioned that Buffalo Trace had confirmed that both whiskeys used to be made with the same recipe before Buffalo Trace bought the Weller brand in 1998. This week, I heard from Don Lux, the CEO of Luxco, which owns Rebel Yell. Here's his note. Mark, many thanks for reaching out, and sorry for the 3-week delay in getting back to you. This was buried in my email somewhere. In 1999, ourselves, Heaven Hill, and Sazerac purchased a group of brands from UDV, the predecessor to Diageo. At that time, Weller and Rebel Yell were in fact the same whiskey, and for a period of time up through 2004, they were likely the same whiskey, since we purchased the bulk whiskey stocks with the brand, and Sazerac and us split the stocks between us. However, since that time, the whiskey has been different. I am not sure what Sazerac is putting in Weller at this point. On Rebel Yell, it is still a wheat whiskey, meaning it has more wheat than a normal primarily rye blend. We took the same mash bill from UDV and attempted to match it with Heaven Hill, making it for us under contract. We have also changed the age profile to average about 6 years. When we purchased the brand, UDV had the age profile all over the board. I hope this helps. Thanks again. Once again, Sazerac, which owns Buffalo Trace, has not said whether changes have been made to the Weller Special Reserve, but it is still a wheated bourbon. Hopefully this clears up some of the confusion. And by the way, I passed this info on during the week to Ken Goldenberg and got this reply from him. Mark, thank you so much for your time and effort in researching this. An interesting story indeed, and explains why some photos I've seen of Weller bottles were the same as Rebel's. Gotta love bourbon history. Again, thanks for this and your shows and videos. Now maybe you should do a book one day. I bet it would be great. Ken. Well, we'll see about that book someday, Ken. Meanwhile, Matt Wooler posted this on the WhiskeyCast Facebook page. After once again not getting to Fagiel myself and WhiskeyCast not allowing me to live the dream through a daily podcast, I just re-listened to last year's episodes all over again. I have to say, Mark, you have broadcast from many a location, but by far there was a real spring in your step and jovial peak in your voice right from the first episode, 254. Somehow I think you may have wished you were back there again this year, yes? Well, that's an easy answer. Of course I would have liked to be on Isla again this year. There's not a time when I would not like to be on Isla. And with the development of WhiskeyCast HD, we may try to put something together for the Phage next year. If you have comments, suggestions, or questions, you can always post them on the WhiskeyCast Facebook page or just email me. My email address is comments@whiskeycast.com. The emails of the week are brought to you this time around by Johnny Walker on the web at johnnywalker.com, where you can become a whiskey insider today. Time now for the calendar of events brought to you by Laphroaig. The Dundee Dell in Omaha, Nebraska will host single malt tastings on July 10th and the 14th. The Whiskey Exchange Vinopolis in London will host a Balvenie Whiskey Academy tasting July 11th. Proof on Main in Louisville, Kentucky will have its regular Bourbon and the Girls tasting July 14th. Nichols and Perks in Stourbridge, England will host a Glenglassaugh tasting on July 15th. And the Sutherland Inn in Brora, Scotland will hold its first ever single malt tasting with Diageo's Duncan McRae July 27th. Finally, I talked with Robin Lang on the show a few weeks ago about his new CD, Whiskey for Breakfast. It's a little way off, but he'll be performing and leading a tasting at the Scotch Malt Whiskey Society's venue in London, November 8th. Tickets are already on sale, and they'll likely sell out quickly. That's just one of many events that I've added to the calendar for the rest of this year. You'll find the full list at the WhiskeyCast website, and it's brought to you, as always, by Laphroaig. Become a friend of Laphroaig today and claim your own square foot of Isla. This week's WhiskeyCast In Depth is brought to you by Auchentoshan. Back to our top story of the week now, the dedication of the new $50 million Wild Turkey Distillery in Lawrenceburg, Kentucky this week. This may be the only place you'll be able to hear Jimmy Russell's entire comments during the dedication. There were about 150 people on hand, from Kentucky Governor Steve Beshear to many of the distillery's employees. And as you might expect, Jimmy had the crowd in stitches.
Well, I did have a speech up here, but they throwed it away. What am I going to do now? Oh, here it is. Again, thank everyone for coming out today on this beautiful... The sun always shines bright in my old Kentucky home, doesn't it, Governor? You know, this is, you're standing on top of the bourbon capital of the world, Lawrenceburg, Kentucky. Wild Turkey's bourbon. We make over 95% of the bourbon. You know, the main thing, these people standing back here, proud of them, the workers here at the Wild Turkey Distillery. It wasn't for them, none of us would be here. Most of them has got 25, 30, 40 years experience working here at the distillery. And it's family. It's, you know, you're getting old. When you're working with the grandchildren, you started out with their grandparents. And now, I found out the other day, a little older than that. It's two or three great-grandchildren working here, so I've been around a long time, Governor. But again, we'd like to thank Campari for what they're doing for us. They're spending more money. Can you all hear me in the back all right? What they're doing for us. You know, we go a long way back with them. Here, they, you know, they're proud of what we're doing, or they wouldn't fly all the way from Milan, all the group being here. So we're really proud of them. And we go back a long way with Campari. I don't know whether y'all realize it or not, but all the Campari for the United States was bottled here on this hill for many, many years. So it goes around in a circle, comes around again. But again, like Sky Group, you know, they've been a part of us for a long time. Some of them I've known for years and years and years. Edwina, thank you. John, thank you. All of you, all of our friends and family, we're proud to be here today, and thank you all for coming out at this time. The ABC members, thank you. All the people, KDA, the tourist trail, the bourbon trail, it means a lot to this state. You know, our state representatives, Julian King, some of our federal, all of them here today, and we're proud to say that, so that they come out and be with us. But again, we are proud to be part of the group, Campari Group. They're spending more money this year on advertising on Wild Turkey than it's been spent probably in the last 7 or 8 years. So you know they believe in what we're doing here, or they wouldn't come all the way over here. You know, Kentucky is the birthplace of bourbon. Got its name in Bourbon County. I don't know why, but most of Kentucky is still in Prohibition. what is it? I think, if I'm not mistaken, what is it? 90 counties is still dry in Kentucky. You know, how many of you Southern Baptists? Not even going to own up to it, are you? I don't tease about religion. I'm a Southern Baptist. You know who invented bourbon? Southern Baptist minister. You didn't hold up your hand, Governor. But yes, Elijah Craig, us Baptists just makes it for municipal purposes only. I keep a cough all the time. But the bourbon industry means so much to the state of Kentucky. Not only in, I said the state, you know, we're a commonwealth. We're not a state. Everybody calls us a state, but we're a commonwealth. It means so much. All employees that works at the distilleries, I don't know how many it is now, but it's quite a few. The money, the taxes, it all means a lot to the state of Kentucky. You know, and also the tourists that Bob spoke a little bit about. We started back in 1988, built our first visitor center here on a home that was on the property. Now I think we're going to run about 60,000 visitors through here this year. People come from all over the world to visit the distilleries, goes through the bourbon trail. This is part of the KDA that started this, and it's really growing and continue to grow. But you know, everywhere you go in the world, Kentucky is famous for their bourbon, their horses, and used to be the tobacco. But we've about done away with that now. But again, you know, anywhere you go, usually the first thing they ask you about when you're in Kentucky, have you been to Kentucky Derby? Have you been to a bourbon distillery? Or have you been to Mammoth Cave? Anywhere you go in the world, just about, they'll ask you about that. But again, it's, you know, it's a privilege to be in Kentucky. You know, Wild Turkey is only one of the few bourbons that I know of that has the same label worldwide. Anywhere you go in the world, you see the Wild Turkey label, the old bird on the label, anywhere you go. A lot of them has different labels for different places, even in the United States. But Wild Turkey is the same worldwide. So if you're traveling, you can look up and see that label. You know it's coming from Lawrenceburg, Kentucky. Again, it's the same label. As he said, we make it a little change in the label. The first time there's been a major change in the Wild Turkey label in my lifetime. So we changed just a little bit over the years, but this is the first major change that's ever been made. Still the same old product in the bottle, but it's a new label, new package. And say, a good old boy changes his shirt every once in a while, don't we, John? I got to tease my buddies around here. But again, it's a privilege, you know, to be here, to work with all these fine people. It's a lot of pride here at the Wild Turkey Distillery. If you not just look at the people here, talk to the people that works here. You know, they come to work every day to make the best bourbon in the world. The thing gives me the most pride every day, I get to work with my son. He's new in the business. He's only been here 30 years now. You know, he was going to college. During summertime, his mama told me, said, put that boy to work, said he's laying around the house all the time. Well, he come to work here. It's been a long summer, hadn't it, Eddie? Still 30 years, he's still here. But again, proudest moment of my life. Eddie was inducted into the Bourbon Hall of Fame last year, which is proud to have your own son. I was fortunate enough to get to work with my father here for several years. A lot of you people are employees sitting out here now. I see several of them. Your dad's worked here and you worked with them, or your mother's worked here and you worked with your mothers every day. So it's, you know, it's the bourbon people. We're the bourbon people. That's what we feel like. We're always going to give you the best bourbon we can put out. We're going to make it a thing. You know, and Eddie, as he said, is following in the footsteps. He's come out with his own product, 81 proof. You know, he went about that. He's got his 81. I got my 101. And, you know, it's a hot day. But Wild Turkey 101's not hot, is it? It's always cool, ain't it? Again, you know, it's a family thing. We're dedicated. All of us are dedicated from the top to the bottom. We really appreciate that. And you know, another thing about working here at the distillery, many things happens over the years. My wife worked here. I hadn't been here very long, maybe a year. And one of the fellas, old fellas, asked me, said, I guess you back up to get your check every week, don't you? I said, what? He says, you have to back up no more than you do. I said, oh, do you get paid? He said, what do you mean? I said, well, I never got a check since I've been here. About 10 minutes, he come back, said, your wife works in the office. She's taking her check, your check home with her every time. But over the years, when I started here, we had 4 storage buildings. We had 12 fermenters. And now we're up to making, we can make 11 million gallons a year. So it's a great time for the wild turkey business. Continue to build, and I know good grains, good barrels. We get good barrels from a barrel company. All the people involved, our suppliers, all the people that helped build this. Been a wonderful trip for me. I hope it'd be a few more years, but you never know when, you know, I tease and cut up all the time. You young people don't even think about this. But what we're making and putting in a barrel now, I hope I'm still living. When it's sold, you take 8 to 10 to 12 years from now. You don't know what it'd be around. But again, it's been a great pleasure. And I thank all of y'all for coming out. Does anybody ever work? Look around here. Nobody must not have a job. Always out all the time. But again, we like to take this opportunity to thank all of our people from Campari, Sky, Wild Turkey, around, and all us representatives and senators, the governor, all of our suppliers and everything for a job well done and continuing. We'll continue to put out the best bourbon we can for you. Thank you very much.
After the ceremonies ended, I sat down with Jimmy and Eddie Russell in the distillery's tasting lab for a chat.
Tell me what went into the thinking starting years ago when you realized that the plant across the street was not going to be able to meet the ongoing demand, because I know that goes back to the previous ownership, doesn't it?
The old plant goes back to 1890 distillery. It's wooden beams. It's wooden pegged at all. It's a real old building. And we kept expanding down there, expanding, till we got to the point the federal government wouldn't let us build out over US 62 or the Kentucky River. That's how far we went. We couldn't go any further. So we had this property up here, and it was time to, with the growth of wild turkey worldwide, we need something else to do. So we come up on the hill and expanded the facilities up here.
And this was all warehouse space up here before, right?
Right. There was 2 warehouses sitting here, and we emptied them out and tore them down. Just a great spot right here above the river where, you know, you want to be high up on the hill. So just a perfect spot for us to do our expansion.
Tell me about the plans. How much leeway did you have when you decided that this was going to have to be expanded and the old distillery was going to have to be closed and essentially moved across the road? How much capacity did you decide to build in for the future? And let me ask this one of you, Eddie, since I have a sneaking suspicion that you're going to be doing this a few more years.
Yeah, I hope to. I hope to get plenty more years in. We basically doubled our capacity. We hadn't quite reached capacity what we were making over at the other distillery, but we knew that we needed to have it for 6, 8, 10 years down the road soon. So once we started, we'd actually spent a few million dollars over there upgrading, making it where we could do a few more gallons. But it just got to the point where we knew. And when we started thinking about it, we set this up over here where we could easily expand even a little more and push it a little higher. But we wanted to at least double our capacity. We thought that would get us at least 20 years in. But now, the way bourbon's growing, maybe not. Maybe 10 years. We might have to expand right here again.
Does that surprise you that you're looking at another expansion in 10 years, Jimmy?
No, it doesn't. The way the bourbon industry is growing now worldwide. You know, we're getting all the way around the world now. Many, many years, my younger years, it was basically a U.S. drink, especially a Southern drink, it's all through the South. And now it's a worldwide drink. Anywhere you go in the world, people knows about bourbon and knows about Kentucky bourbon.
I've had questions that I'll ask you in a few minutes all from listeners literally all over the world, from as far away as Australia. Does all of this surprise you that wild turkey is so popular literally all over the world?
Not really. It's growing all over the world. And, you know, we're talking about Australia, Japan. They're huge markets for us. It's things that they love the taste of bourbon. They love that flavor. As long as you're putting out a good bourbon, they really enjoy it.
And speaking of that and the taste and the flavor, you guys just came out with Wild Turkey 81, which was your baby, right, Eddie?
Yeah, that was my baby, the first one I worked on by myself. You know, what I did and what I've been Jimmy's beat into my head for 30 years is flavor. That's what it's all about. So that was my main goal. Was the thing for me is the younger generation, the mixologist, you know, that I was thinking about that. You know, I grew up with, you drank it straight or with a little water. But nowadays, the younger generation, which has, when we get them at a younger age, we have them their whole life instead of waiting until their palates change as they get a little older. So as I was thinking about the 81, I wanted to make sure the flavor was there, but it was very mixable, but even very easy to drink for a younger generation. So that's where I was headed when I was thinking about 81.
What do you think about 81? Because I know you've said for years that 101 is the ideal proof for a bourbon, and then to come out with one that's 20 proof for 10 points lower ABV. What do you think of this?
Well, you know, it's a great product. It's still got the flavor of the body there. It's like you said, it's a younger generation. It's not going to take away from the 101 drinkers. They're going to continue to drink their 101. This is a new generation, new people coming into the market that maybe thought 101 was too strong. This gives them an entry level in. And it's got the flavored body, and the mixologist is going to love it because the younger generation is going more and more to mixed drinks now.
How did you manage to keep the flavor while lowering the alcoholic level?
By putting a lot more age on it. Most 80-proof bourbons are 4 to 5 years old. This is 6, 7, and 8 year old. So that's one thing about Wild Turkey. We've generally been a little older than most bourbons from the very beginning. But the 81 is just our acknowledgement in our industry that everybody used to have one bottle, 101. All the distilleries had one bottle. But now we have to think about, we came out with barrel proofs to hit another niche. We came out with single barrels to please other people. So we're just looking to grasp everybody, not just that certain people that drink bourbon on the rocks or straight or neat. So we want a different taste. We want to make sure the flavor's there, but we wanted different levels of how strong it is, how straight out of the barrel, as natural as you can get it with rare breed or Kentucky Spirit being a single barrel. The 101 is the head dog, you know, and always has been. That's our main brand. But we want to be able to put things out there for people that might not like the 101.
Let me take this back across the road to the old place, Jimmy. Tell me your best memories of the old distillery.
Well, you know, it's a lot of old memories. The people that you work with over the years. Our mayor was here today, and she was talking about her grandfather and father working here many, many years ago. And that's the memories I have. Excuse me. That's the memories I have. You know, people that's worked here, done gone on to be in heaven now, but yet the it goes on, their families are still working here, the family situation, one after generation after another. And that's what I hope to see in the rest of the time. It'd be generation after generation. And that way you know that you got people that believes in what you're doing, interested in what you're doing, and they're going to try to do the best job they can.
What's going to happen to the old place?
Eventually, we'll probably have to it's no way that we can do anything with it, because with all the new regulations, the government regulation, OSHA, fire marshal, it's wood. I mean, it's wood beams. It's no way. We tried for years to do different things to preserve, but it's just no way that we can continue to do it. Now, it might be we get some kind of relief maybe in the future, but I don't know for sure. There's a historical place, but then nothing could be done in it. But I don't know what we'll finally do with it.
Will it be a sad day if it finally has to come down?
It will for me, yes. You know, some place that you spent 56 years in, it's a big difference.
Tell me about the transition, because I know some of the stills and a lot of the equipment was moved over here to the new facility, right, Eddie?
Yeah, we took pieces from the old distillery and brought over here a lot of stuff, new. The biggest difference is it's very computerized. We still have the same two guys running during the daytime that have over 40 years. They started out doing it all by hand, where now they use a computer to help them. But they still have the knowledge to walk out and look at the fermenters to see if they're working right, what stage they're in, the temperatures that they need to be. So what parts we brought over here were parts we thought would be crucial to keep making that same great bourbon flavor that we always have. So if we did want to make a little bit over there, we'd have to replace a few things.
Yeah, we'd have to go back and take some more parts back that we brought over here. But again, you know, to me, we should be more consistent. Now, when Eddie's talking about, you know, we got computers controlling things, when I started, and even when he started, most of that was done by hand. Well, you know, we're all human, so we might be a little slow making those adjustments, but we still got the people doing it. They're right there on top of it. It's not somebody sitting 50 miles away running it. It's people right here, sitting right here, doing it right on the job, seeing everything going right and everything's right. Where, say, it's not somebody sitting. A lot of days now, you know, I just read something the other day where some fellow was in Louisville doing an operation in Lexington. I don't know whether you heard about that or not. I want somebody doing a computer work of operating on me in Lexington and him in Louisville. Didn't I read something about that here a while back? Yeah, I think so, didn't I? You know, but we got people's right here doing it. It's not like being off way off someplace running it.
Tell me about the process of getting this place online in the new facility and getting the spirit exactly the same as the old facility, because I assume you had to do some tweaking and fine-tuning to get things started, and whichever one of you wants to handle that one.
We came over here in December. This is June, and we're just now getting to the point where it's where we want it. It just takes time to sort of break your steel in, break your doubler in, break everything that's new in, and then tweak the little things. You know, over here the temperatures might be just a tad different because you're at a different sea level, or just different things like that that you just got to go through, make a little bit, taste it, and make your adjustments on what you're tasting.
Now, is this going to cause a supply problem down the road for that 6 months of tweaking and tuning when you start needing to bottle some of this stuff 5, 6, 7 years down the road?
It shouldn't bother anyone bit. You know, it's still a good product. We're just trying to fine-tune it down. Even in the old distillery, we had to replace the steel or rebuild them ever so, because copper wears out fast. You know, we had to do the same thing over there every time that we had to rebuild our steel or anything, our doubler. We still had to do all that tweaking and getting it back. Cause, you know, like Eddie said, it might be one, and you really don't realize this, 1 or 2 degrees in temperature means a whole lot of difference to us. Where it might be up here at 1 or 2 degrees, might have to be up a little higher than down there. You know, so you got to get in that point to where you know exactly where you want it set to run what you want to produce every day.
We made some good whiskey here this spring, but when we start back up in the fall, we'll be going full bore. We'll be running as hard as she can run, you know, to make sure we have enough whiskey for this year.
So you're going to be down for the summer?
We'll go down within the next week, and then we'll be down July and August, and probably after Labor Day we'll start back up, which will be about 4 or 5 weeks early. And then, like I said, we'll be going full bore. We'll test her out for sure.
This is another thing in our business, in the bourbon business, has always been, you always shut down in the real hot months. It's too hot to make good bourbon that time of year. You know, you're just cooking, and you're cooking up to 212 degrees, and then you're having to cool down to 60 degrees. Wintertime, you got plenty of cold water to do that with, and you have to run big chill. And you're just sitting there cooking the grains, or beating them to death. You're not cooking them anymore. It just takes much longer. And to me, all bourbon distilleries, I doubt whether you'll find one running in July and August in the state of Kentucky. We've never run in them hot weathers.
So are you going to have to replace those two warehouses that you took down to put this up?
Actually, we've built 5 in the last 6 years and have a new one planned for next year. The way things are going, each warehouse holds about 20,000 barrels. So each time we increase production by 10 or 20,000, because we were basically full. So we've been building a lot of warehouses, which is another $2.5 to $3 million each time. But it's putting a lot of people to work around this area.
And you're going to have to build a lot of those now. If you're doubling the capacity, you're going to have to double your warehousing, right?
Well, we basically have one a year from now on, as far out as we plant.
Well, we went from 4 storage buildings when I come here to what we got, 26
right now. And one, like I said, we'll start one, most likely start it this fall. We say next year, but it'll start this fall and be ready next fall.
Let's say it was 4 when I come here, 26 of them now, 460,000 barrels in inventory right now.
A little over 470,000 barrels on hand.
So what did you guys do with the first barrel of spirit from the new distillery and the last barrel from the old one?
Well, we've got them marked. We got them put away in one of my favorite warehouses. So we'll decide what we're going to do down the road.
You know, it just ended last fall in the old distillery, so it'll be 8 years or 10 before we'll have it on. Now this one will be another 8 to 10 years before it's on the market.
But you might do something special with those, or just hang on to them maybe even.
I'm sure there'll be some kind of special thing done with them. It'll be, of course, me and Jimmy would definitely like to take that last barrel home with us and just keep it, but I'm sure there'll be some type of deal where they'll do something special.
And we'll also special this day here, the 21st of June, the dedication of the expansion program. This day's production will probably, 8 to 10 years from now, will be something special that will be on the market, a few bottles of it.
And you'll take the rest.
If I'm still around. My age, you don't know whether you'll be around that long or not.
You'll still be working, don't worry.
You're not planning on hanging it up anytime soon, are you?
Well, not as I know of right now, unless they kick me out.
Now, I mentioned that I would be asking them some of your questions. You'll find that discussion in the latest episode of WhiskeyCast HD. It's available now on YouTube and the iTunes Music Store, as well as the WhiskeyCast website. Now, at the end of the day, I had the chance to go over to the old distillery and look around inside, take some pictures, and shoot some video. It is a sad sight, to be completely honest with you. A lot of the equipment has been removed. There are still signs around. A lot of debris on the floor. I was told to watch out for snakes inside the building. There are some critters running around as well. I'm posting some of the photos of both the new distillery and the old one as it exists right now on the WhiskeyCast Facebook page over the next few days, and I hope you'll take a look at them. This week's WhiskeyCast In Depth is brought to you by Auchentoshan, the triple distilled since 1823, on the web at auchentoshan.com. Let's start off the What I'm Tasting This Week department with a couple of the new whiskeys I mentioned a few minutes ago during the news. The Dalmore Cigar Malt Reserve is bottled at 44% ABV, and while I've never had the urge to try a cigar, the Cigar Malt Reserve is quite nice. The nose is full of honey, orange marmalade, and cinnamon notes. The taste carries over those same notes, and the great mouthfeel comes alive with touches of allspice and almonds. The finish is rich and smooth with toffee, honey, and citrus fruits as well. I'm scoring the Dalmore Cigar Malt Reserve a 92. Tomatin's 30-year-old, as I mentioned before, replaces the current 25-year-old expression. It's bottled at 46% ABV. The nose is citrusy and inviting with lemon peel, hints of spices, and honey. The taste starts off creamy with a touch of honey, followed by a nice spiciness that builds quickly, then fades away slowly to reveal lemony tartness and a touch of mango. The finish is medium length, tart, and citrusy, and I'm scoring the Tomatin 30-year-old an 89. Finally, I received a sample of the Kilhoman 2011 spring release this week. It's also bottled at 46% ABV. The nose has a smooth peatiness along with heather, a hint of vanilla, and a slight nuttiness. The taste is smooth and peaty with a touch of brine, vanilla, and a citrusy tartness, and the finish is long, smoky, and smooth with a hint of vanilla. It's excellent, especially given its relative youth, and I'm scoring the Kilhoman spring 2011 release a 90. You'll find all of my tasting notes in the free WhiskeyCast apps for iPhone, iPad, and Android. The Apple edition is sponsored by the Glenrothes, while the Android version is sponsored by Ben Romick. They're also available at the WhiskeyCast website, along with links to the WhiskeyCast Facebook page and my Twitter feed, the calendar of events, WhiskeyCast HD, the WhiskeyCast store, powered by Amazon.com, and a complete archive of past episodes. The address is WhiskeyCast.com, and my email address is comments@WhiskeyCast.com. WhiskeyCast is a production of Cask Strength Media, copyright 2011, and comes to you from the charming, yet regrettably dry town of Haddonfield, New Jersey. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.